When I decided to go to seminary, I should have been really excited, but I was terrified. Familiar story, anyone? Mostly because in that moment where I made that decision, I'd never felt more alone. My family is very supportive now. It's a little too late to not be supportive. But in the beginning, they weren't that accepting at all. In fact, upon hearing my intention to enter seminary, my grandfather, the oldest member of our family, said, "You know, I have a better idea for you. Wouldn't you rather make lots of money and then donate it all to the church? What do you think about that?" Actually, now that I think about it, it's a pretty good idea, but you know, it's a little too late. There was also this other pesky obstacle. I was a woman. In my conservative, evangelical Korean context, this meant I didn't have the affirmation I so desperately sought from my home church, my pastors, or my spiritual mentors. When I actually finally admitted to my pastor that I felt called to ordained ministry, he responded by saying, "Christine, you aren't practical enough for ministry." He meant, "You aren't male enough for ministry." There I was, following my call, going against my family's hopes and wishes for me, and simultaneously losing the support of my worshiping community who really had raised me. Would I be okay? Following my call without the support of people in the community that I loved, would I be okay? The rejection I felt during that time was really overwhelming. The fear consumed me. And to have faith that things would be okay in the midst of that fear felt like an impossibility. Church, have you ever been there? Our passage today is a story about two very different people, but in similar circumstances. Two people who were full of fear, who were challenged to believe against all odds. First, we have Jairus, the synagogue leader, as Mark mentioned several times. He seeks Jesus out and approaches Jesus, not as a person of stature, but as a desperate parent. You can hear the urgency in his voice, and Mark says he repeatedly asked Jesus, "Teacher, hurry. My little girl is dying. One touch from you and she will live. Let us go." And while they were on their way, a second character in our story interrupts them. Imagine in your mind's eye what is going through Jairus's head. Here he is, the trip of his life. Every second counts, and Jesus stops. A woman who has been bleeding for 12 years has exhausted all other paths of healing and even her personal resources. And she too is desperate like Jairus. And despite the purity laws that say due to her disease, she has no access to crowds like this, she pushes through and touches the hem of Jesus' clothes. And in that moment, in that space where both Jairus and the unnamed woman are in Jesus' presence, the difference in their social standing is of no consequence. See, when we are in pain before God, it doesn't really matter where we're from. They are both people afraid, yet bold in their claim that this will not be their reality. See, we have power to claim that. The woman's reach for the hem of Jesus' clothes declares that this disease will no longer have power over her. She will no longer live a life limited by pain and social denigration. And despite her fear, her faith is an act of defiance and resistance to her disease and social condemnation. She was reaching not only for the hem of those clothes, but for new life. Meanwhile, Jairus, for all his access to power, I mean, imagine, he can approach Jesus right away in the crowd's part, and the woman has to reach for the hem. He can still do nothing. The worst has already happened. His daughter is dead. But when Jesus sees the fear and despair of a parent whose worst nightmare has come true, He commands Jairus, who should be mourning, to do instead what feels impossible. Believe and continue on. The Talmudic understanding of our human relationship with God and the world is that we are invited to struggle viscerally with God and with creation. God invites us to wrestle in that tenuous space between fear and faith, to reach for the hem of that garment even though our hands are trembling. For some of us here in this space today, we are frustrated and unsure. Our personal paths and plans for our lives have been interrupted. Some of us have exhausted all of our resources to get here, and our reservoirs of strength and even breathing feel burdensome. Some of us feel heartsick and angry as we watch the world erupt in violence. The Syrian refugee crisis with 11 million people displaced. 11 million. The mass incarceration of black men. The all-too-functional school-to-prison pipeline within a dysfunctional education system. Increasingly normalized violence against women and children. Mass shootings. Newtown. Charleston. And now Roseburg. Par for the course. Our efforts to mend our lives and mend the world feel like we are grasping at straws, particularly after a night like yesterday. Yet in the midst of the struggle, here we are, in this place, answering the call of God on our lives. Here we are, the people of God, full of fear and trembling, yet boldly practicing resistance by putting our faith into action every day. Through our belief, we declare our claim on a different future for ourselves and for our world. And we too, like Jairus and the unnamed woman, approach our teacher through whom all things are possible. We wrestle with God and our world, with one another, and with our innermost selves as a sacred practice of a spiritual people. God is here, yes? In the interstitial spaces, the in-between of fear and faith, even between life and death, God is with us. Emmanuel. There is power in the hem of that robe, and it is more than enough. Believe. Amen.